Hello, welcome to the Saturn edition of your local talking newspaper, covering St Albans and the surrounding district. This edition is for the week ending March the 9th, 2019. I'm Michael, one of your readers tonight, and I'm joined in the studio by John, Mayo and Angela. The piece of music you've just heard is called Spring Breeze, and we will play all of it at the end of the recording. As usual, our thanks go to Goffby, who composed the music and has given us permission to use it. All the news items in this recording have been taken from the Hearts Advertiser, and we will finish with a summary of the radio programmes we think you might enjoy over the next week. Unfortunately, due to technical issues, the BBC In Touch podcast will not be included in this edition. Bill will include both next week, so you can catch up. And here is John with the first item.
Hello. The first item is, the title is 189 pupils left without any choice of secondary school. When school places were announced on Friday, 189 children in St Albans and Harpenden were not allocated their first, second, third or even fourth choice school. Mother, Josie Maddock, who lives in Edward Close in St Albans, said that her daughter, Saarinen, felt terrible that she didn't get into any of her chosen schools, Beaumont, Staggs, Samuel Ryder or Sandringham. She said, "I got an email informing me that my daughter does not have a school at all for September. You either get one of your four choices or you get an alternative, which is either a school in St Albans or one further away. I seem to have fallen into an entirely new bracket where there are no school vacancies at all. It's just an absolute shambles." She said she feels terrible. She was so excited about knowing where she was going to school. "I left work early to tell her because I was distraught about it as well." Josie believes the shortfall in places is due to a large number of children being born in 2008. Continuous housing developments in St Albans with no added provision for schooling and the delayed opening of the new Catherine Warrington School in Harpenden. Pupils wishing to attend the Catherine Warrington School when it opens in September applied for both the new school and a place elsewhere, meaning that if they get into the new school, their alternative place will only then be available for another child. However, the 189 children currently without a school place must now go on what's called a continued interest waiting list, with no priority over people who've already been offered a school but just prefer a different one. Josie said, "Everyone gets chucked onto the list and then it's based on distance from the school, regardless of whether you've been offered a place or not. People with no place at the moment should jump to the top of the waiting list." School places will be allocated again on Monday, March the 18th, with pupils who didn't get a school this time around hopefully finding a place. The St Albans branch of Fair Funding for All Schools said that the government were letting our children down by not providing places for these 189 pupils. They said, "This amounts to just over six classes of children without a school to go to. This is appalling." Tanya Page's 11-year-old daughter, Chloe, didn't receive a place at either Samuel Ryder, Sandringham, Staggs or Beaumont. Tanya, who lives in Bardwell Court, that's just off Holywell Hill, said, "I just find it a disgrace. It is beyond a joke. I have to accept the school we're being given on March the 18th. I got an email telling us we can also put our names down for Nicholas Breakspear, Townsend and Catherine Warrington School, but none of these are our choices. It's such a lot of frustration and anxiety, especially for an 11-year-old child. When she came out of school on Friday, all she was thinking of was, I'm going to find my school place. It's ludicrous. It's bizarre." Mum Melissa from Park Street, who also has a daughter with no school place, said, "It's absolutely devastating for these children. To tell a child that they haven't got a school place has such a detrimental impact on their mental health. The council is trying to pass the buck onto the new secondary school in Harpenden. They're essentially using this as their get-out-of-jail-free card. They are assuming that the 189 children are going to select the Harpenden School, which hasn't even been built yet. So you've got 189 children basking in two offers and 189 children with no offers whatsoever. Coney Heath councillor Chris Brazier said that four children from Coney Heath School did not get a secondary school place. He said, of course, the parents are stressed. I've talked to the county council school admissions and they said the parents should be patient until the second chance on March the 18th. They've built over 70 houses by Beaumont School, which rules Coney Heath out from getting that school at all. I think that's part of the problem and it's not going to get any better. It's very different now for children who live in villages to get secondary school places in St Albans. According to Hertfordshire County Council, of the 14,714 children in the county who applied this year, 75% of them gained a place at their first choice school and 93% gained a place at one of the choices on their list. All applicants who were not given their first choice were automatically placed on the continuing interest list for any schools they listed higher up.
Good evening, this is Mayo here. I'm just going to follow on from this article because it's about Hearts County Council. They say they're confident that the shortfall in school places for children in St Albans will be redressed once pupils accept offers at Catherine Warrington School. Councillor Terry Douris, Cabinet Member for Education, Libraries and Localism, said, "We appreciate that this is a worrying time for parents whose children have not currently been allocated a secondary school place. The number of applications received this year has increased. However, we have been planning for this expected rise in pupil numbers for years. As a result, a new secondary school, Catherine Warrington, is set to open in September 2019. This much-needed new free school has been funded and delivered by the Department for Education. Unfortunately, due to a delay in funding approval, it was not possible for us to include Catherine Warrington School in the normal allocation process for 2019. And applications had to be submitted through parallel process. This means that a large number of children in the area have been offered two places, one at Catherine Warrington and one through the coordinated scheme. These families will now advise us which offer they will be accepting, meaning duplicate offers are removed and a large number of places will become available. We are confident that we will be able to offer a local school place to all children during the first run of continuing interest in week commencing 18th of March. Liberal Democrat parliamentary spokesperson Daisy Cooper blamed the lack of places on the delay in offering firm places at Catherine Warrington. She said, "The transfer to secondary school is stressful enough for students and their parents. The County Council has increased the stress by failing to get Catherine Warrington School approved in time. It is not good enough to tell parents not to worry. The Council should be actively contacting the affected families and talking to them about what is being done to resolve the problem." John Hale, County Councillor for Colney Heath and Marshallwick, said, "The increased number of primary school children have shown for years that there need to be more secondary school places, and yet there has been little sign of action."
Hello, I'm Angela, and my first news story is headed "Charity Cycle Ride Reaches Milestone Silver Anniversary." A renowned annual charity cycling event is celebrating its silver anniversary in 2019. The St Albans Charity Cycle Ride, SACCR, was set up in 1994 by the three Rotary Clubs of St Albans, St Albans, Priory and Verulamium. For 25 years, cyclists have chosen to undertake either a 10, 20, 30 or 40-mile route around the district in aid of a variety of national and local charities, and have raised £1 million over that period. This year's causes are Alzheimer's Research UK, Secondary First and the Counselling Foundation. Press officer for SACCR, Karen Mullinex, said, "I think it just shows how hard the Rotary members have worked to set it up and keep it going for 25 years. Unusual participants have previously battled around the routes, which stretch as far as Hitchin, on a unicycle, a tandem and an elliptical bike, which is similar to a cross trainer." Karen Mullinex added, "We want to make it a family-friendly event, and I want more people to know about Rotary. They do a lot of community events." She believes the cycle ride is popular because it's a family-friendly outing with camaraderie and a good way to see the Hertfordshire countryside. Karen said the event has not changed much over 2.5 decades. However, for the first time this year, local businesses will be showcasing their wares in the start and finish field at Oaklands College campus on Hatfield Road. There will be food, drink and children's activities available. This year, early bird entrance fees for children under 16 are slashed from £10 to £5. Adult tickets are £22 and over 65s are £10. The event will take place on May 19th and registration is open at www.saccr.co.uk. Alzheimer's Research UK work to develop policy that improves the lives of people with dementia.
This is another charity fundraising event, this time not on a bicycle but in the water. Resilient swimmers are plunging into St Dorman's Pool to raise money for homeless people. The Rotary Clubs of St Albans and District have, for the first time, organised a 4-hour swimathon to raise money for Hearts Young Homeless, a charity which supports vulnerable people in this county. It's already being supported by Pilates in St Albans and the Salmon Club, a disability swimming group. Each team of up to 6 people will swim for 30 minutes. Individual entrants are also welcome. It's being held on March the 9th at Westminster Lodge Leisure Centre on Holywell Hill from 6pm to 10pm. There is no age limit, but entrants must be able to swim 25 metres.
Two people have pleaded not guilty to the murder of a 20-year-old man in London Coney. Carla Callum, aged 30, from Walsingham Way in London Coney, and Anis Anderson, aged 20, from Fordwich Road in London, appeared before St Albans Crown Court on Friday the 1st of March. They've been remanded in custody ahead of a trial set to start on May the 20th. Asanullah Nawazi from London was found seriously injured in Walsingham Way on the evening of November the 28th last year. He had suffered a number of stab wounds and was taken to hospital where he later died.
This is about a teenage girl who violently attacked 3 14-year-olds in St Albans and has been given a 10-month youth referral order. The 15-year-old, who lives in Redbourne but cannot be named for legal reasons, was found guilty of 2 assaults last year at Westminster Lodge Leisure Centre on April the 2nd and in Park Street Lane on April the 5th. Her victims were left with chipped teeth, black eyes and bruising after the attacks. She pleaded guilty to a 3rd assault near McDonald's in Griffiths Way on May the 12th. The offender must pay 2 of the victims £50, the 3rd £100, and court costs of £620. She was also given a 10-month youth referral order. This is a community-based order in which the court refers the child to a youth offender panel to set a contract of work. Local crime unit Detective Constable Claire Mann said, "These were vicious attacks which left three young girls with visible injuries, including chipped teeth, black eyes and bruising. Not only were they injured, but they were understandably scared by these violent attacks. This unprovoked violence had a huge negative impact across the community in April and May last year. The Hearts ad was aware of the attacks at the time of the incidents, but held off publication to allow police to collect evidence which may have been deleted if the suspects became aware of the investigation. After this had been secured, the newspaper ran a story on the crimes. Detective Constable Mann said, "We worked closely with the parents of the victims and the schools at the time and were able to quickly identify the offender." St Albans Councillor Chief Inspector Linda Coates said, "We will not tolerate violence assaults of any kind in St Albans. I hope this girl's conviction helps reassure the brave victims and their families." One of the parents of one of the victims has already been in contact to say they are pleased with the verdict, which makes our job worthwhile. We also want to encourage pupils to report any kind of assault to their teachers, who will contact us if the matter becomes more serious, as it did in this case.
Sixth Annual Film Festival, gearing up for a jam-packed focus on classics. The St Albans Film Festival is back for another year with a jam-packed schedule of cult classics, family favourites and blockbusters. Festival patrons can enjoy a launch party, screenings across the city and an open-air cinema in the grounds of St Albans Cathedral for the annual event. This is the sixth year St Albans Film Festival has catered to movie lovers across the city, and the third year a large outdoor screen has been erected in the Abbey Orchard. The screen will be up for 11 days this year, up from 6 days in 2018. Film showings on a classics theme include Gladiator, Romeo and Juliet, Grease, Silence of the Lambs, and recent Oscar winner Bohemian Rhapsody. The festival kicks off with a fancy dress Rocky Horror Picture Show launch party, but more events, including at the Auburn Arena and the Pudding Stop, will be announced in due course. Festival director Matt Bigg said, "We cannot wait to bring the Abbey Open Air Cinema to St Albans once again, in the beautiful cathedral grounds, in what's known locally as the Abbey Orchard. Our theme is classics, and we will be showing something for everyone. A chick flick, a family film, a teen movie, and a mother and toddler screening." The other festival director is Leonie Kibbe. Matt added, "We think this must be the most stunning location for an outdoor cinema in the UK and are very grateful to the Cathedral for supporting this event." St Albans has an impressive filmmaking history. It's the birthplace of Arthur Melbourne Cooper and a second home to Stanley Kubrick. The St Albans Film Festival is being sponsored by the University of Hertfordshire, Wilmot Dixon, Oaklands College, Dillon's, Stowe Family Law, the Auburn Arena and St Albans Cathedral. Local businesses and individuals interested in supporting the festival should visit www.stalbansfilmfestival.com and contact the organisers. St Albans Film Festival will take place from June 25th to July 7th. The open-air cinema will be up from June 26th to July 6th. The launch party will be held at the Auburn Arena on June the 25th from 8 p.m. Tickets to this event are £10. It's only for people aged 15 or over. Tickets will be available from March the 11th at www.stalbansfilmfestival.com.
This headline is "Society Fears New Wellbeing Centre Will Never Happen After Long Delays." Progress has stalled on plans for a new health and wellbeing centre in Harpenden. The Harpenden Society has expressed doubts that the plans to renovate the former Harpenden Memorial Hospital site in Carlton Road will come to fruition. The Wellbeing Centre will be based in the Stewart's Building and will offer services for diabetes, leg ulcers and bladder and bowel problems, as well as blood tests and children's speech and language therapy. The rest of the site will be turned into affordable homes, and the adjacent red house will be turned into flats. In a meeting last summer, the Harpenden Society was told the construction would begin during 2019, with the new centre ready for use by late 2020. The editor of Harpenden Society's newsletter, Annan Bunting, wrote in January, "In our winter 2017 newsletter, we reported that a target date for completion of the project had been set at April 2019. But here we are, only 3 months from that date, and progress can, at least to outward appearance, be summed up as appearing to have stalled. Among potential beneficiaries of the promised health and wellbeing centre, especially patients in Harpenden who have to travel considerable distances to clinics or hospitals outside the town, there are feelings of frustration and even anger that the new facility looks no nearer than when it was first mooted some 3 years ago. The proposals have been developed by Hertfordshire Community NHS Trust, HCT, with the close involvement of Hearts Valley's Clinical Commissioning Group, HVCCG. A trust spokesman said, "Hearts Valley's Clinical Commissioning Group supports in principle the proposal that Hertfordshire Community NHS Trust has developed. There are still some arrangements that need to be finalised before the scheme can go ahead." Earlier this year, HVCCG ran a marketing testing programme which confirmed Central London Community Healthcare NHS Trust as the new provider for adult community health services in West Hearts from the autumn, taking over the role from HCT. HCT Chief Executive Claire Hawkins said, "We will support all staff affected by the decision to ensure that there is a smooth transition to CLCH for them and for our patients and local communities."
A special needs school in Redbourne has been adopting a variety of animals as therapy for their pupils. Esther Harbord reports as follows. "Recently, I paid a visit to St Luke's in Redbourne, a school for children with special educational needs, to meet the students and staff and to find out more about all the animals they have and why they have them. The animals include donkeys, sheep, a budgerigar, a chameleon, lizards, and Joe the parrot. They help the students learn practical skills such as handling, communication, and care, as well as creating a calm and supportive environment." Matt Coley, the school's animal care teacher, has been working hard during his 9 years at St Luke's to develop the diversity of the animals. He's in the process of learning more about animal therapy and how it can be incorporated into teaching and learning at the school, which the staff say has been hugely beneficial for the children over the years. Matt brings in his own golden Labrador, Maple, who is much loved by all, and teachers can request her in their lessons or for a specific pupil. She helps relieve stress and contributes to a calm and safe environment. The school is currently in the process of developing their knowledge and use of animal-assisted therapy. They're working with Middlesex University, whose aim is to promote the use of this type of therapy and gain more support for this work from the NHS. Matt said, "Here at St Luke's, we believe in the therapeutic benefits of engaging with animals. Supported by Middlesex University, we're working hard to maximise the benefits that animal therapy can bring to children, reducing stress and providing comfort to those that need it. The school is a delightful place to be, vibrant yet also tranquil. It's evident that the use of animals in the school has been hugely positive to the students and is continuing to grow. Maple is dearly loved and she is an asset to the school. And the dedication of the teachers and Matt is inspiring. The students are happy and the future of the school looks bright."
There is a large picture of Peter Herford, who was the founder of St Albans International Organ Festival and who has died aged 88. He will be remembered for his contribution to music following his death this week. Peter Herford, OBE, was an internationally renowned concert organist and recording artist, and he died on Sunday, March the 3rd, at the age of 88 after a long illness. Peter was born in Minehead, Somerset, on November 22nd, 1930, which is also St. Cecilia's Day, the patron saint of musicians. He studied music and law at Jesus College, Cambridge, and became organist at Holy Trinity in Leamington Spa in 1956. He moved to St. Albans in 1958, where he was appointed Master of Music at the Cathedral, and over the next few years persuaded the Cathedral to replace its organ and played a major part in its redesign. In 1963, Peter founded the St. Albans International Organ Festival with his late wife, Pat. His aim was to introduce more people to the pipe organ as an instrument and to make young participants in the festival's two organ competitions feel welcome in the community. After 20 years at the Cathedral, Peter left to pursue a freelance performing and recording career, which took him all over the world. He appeared as a visiting professor at universities, both at home and abroad, and has been artist-in-residence at Sydney Opera House and president of the Royal College of Organists. He also won awards and international recognition for his recordings of the complete works of Johann Sebastian Bach. Peter lived in St. Albans for the rest of his life, teaching leading performers, and his picture is hung on the local wall of fame at the St. Albans Museum and Gallery. The 30th St. Albans Organ Festival will take place this July, which Festival Chair Leslie King describes as a lasting testament to his vision. She said, "With the death of Peter Herford, St. Albans has lost someone who made a difference in many people's lives at an individual level, brought pleasure to thousands at home and abroad through his music making, and raised the profile of the city through the high standing in which the festival he founded is held around the world. He will be greatly missed. Peter will have a private family funeral and a memorial event will be held at St. Albans Cathedral, the details of which are yet to be announced."
Designs to regenerate and redesign an area in the heart of St. Albans are a step closer to fruition. It has been described as one of the most exciting and biggest developments Council has ever undertaken. Following a community design review in January, St. Albans District Council, SADC, is now putting together proposals for the City Centre Opportunity Site South, CCOS. This is a £60 million redevelopment around the Auburn Arena, including the former police station on Victoria Road, a former NHS clinic on Civic Close, and some adjoining land. Private firm Angle Property had planning permission for 2 6-storey buildings on the site, but new plans are being drawn up by SADC contractors after the authority bought the land in 2017. The revised proposals may include a number of affordable and private homes, commercial space and car parking. Recommendations that came from the design review include the creation of more prominent corners, the use of Staffordshire blue brick or York stone, and buildings to enclose a new public space on Victoria Street on its south and west side. Portfolio holder for commercial and development, Councillor Julian Daly, said, "This is one of the most exciting and biggest developments the council has ever undertaken. It has the potential to completely transform a rundown part of the city to the benefit of all residents, as well as creating much needed new business space and housing." If SADC goes ahead, after a cost analysis, the new designs will be reviewed again and will require a new planning application. Councillor Daly added, We are determined to make sure the development is of the highest quality possible and greatly adds to the vibrancy and character of St. Albans. For that reason, we have taken a pause to reflect on the design and consider improvements rather than rush things through. I am confident that if we can make the cost work, this will result in a development that the community can be truly proud of shaping. In the meantime, asbestos is being removed from the former police station and NHS clinic before they are demolished in June. SADC's cabinet was updated on the CCOS South designs on February 28th.
This article is about the opening of a new store in St Albans. Huge queues awaited the opening of a new superstore in St Albans this week. The Range, a home, leisure and garden store in Griffiths Way, caused a buzz on social media after it opened in the old Bunnings warehouse site on Friday. The cutting of the ribbon by St Albans Mayor, Councillor Rosemary Farmer, was met with smiles and applause from onlookers. A team from Heart Radio were in store, running a competition to win a £250 gift card. The shop is spread across two floors and has a large outdoor garden area, as well as family cafe. In addition to home decor, leisure and garden items, the entire Iceland range of food is on offer, including a bakery. Owner and founder of the range, Chris Dawson, said, "It was great to hear so many people at the store opening. I hope they will all manage to find some fantastic bargains." Several activities have been scheduled to mark the new arrival of the store, including a design objectives demonstration on Sunday at 10 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon.
A care home for people with dementia in Redbourne has been awarded a good rating by the Care Quality Commission, the CQC. St Matthew's Care Home in Checker Lane, which provides accommodation and personal care for 72 people, received a good rating in all categories in a recent inspection. The inspector said care and support was delivered in a personalised way by staff who knew the people's likes, dislikes and preferences. Staff promoted people's privacy and dignity, and their choices were respected. The care home was also praised for providing organised group activities with quiet areas for people if they prefer. Residents of the care home and their relatives told inspectors they felt safe and that staff were kind, caring and quick to respond to people's needs. One resident said, "The staff are very good. I don't have to wait and they're always friendly and helpful."
This article is about Commonwealth Day, which is going to be Monday, March the 11th. Children from a St Albans primary school are rehearsing songs in preparation for singing at Westminster Abbey. They are pupils at the Abbey Primary School in Grove Road, and they will take part in this service on Monday, March the 11th. 30 members of the school choir and chamber choir will sing in front of more than 2,000 guests, including the Queen, the Prime Minister, and High Commissioners of Commonwealth countries. The service, which will be filmed by the BBC, marks the 70th anniversary of the formation of the Commonwealth and will feature a procession of flags from the 53 member countries. Head teacher Emma Fern said this is a special opportunity for our pupils and something they will remember all their lives. We are extremely honoured to have been invited to participate.
Pupils in St Albans got a taste of law enforcement when the police came to visit their school. Children at Mandeville Primary School have completed a new Hearts Police scheme in which officers taught them about the law, antisocial behaviour and safety. The mini police programme originated in Durham but was successfully trialled in Harpenden last year. With funding from Police and Crime Commissioner David Lloyd, the scheme is being rolled out across Hearts. PCSO Chris Stokes and Police Cadet Sadie Sunt led the Mandeville classes. PCSO Stokes said, "It was a pleasure working with the children. This is a fantastic opportunity for our younger children to get an insight into their local community and local issues." Mandeville Primary School head teacher, Kathy Longhurst, thanked the officers. My Year 6 teacher said that the programme was a great success and that the children really enjoyed the whole experience.
Here are the names of people who have recently died as published in this week's Hearts Advertiser. Joan Wallace, aged 85. John Baxter, aged 80. Robert Dines, no age is given. Philip Webster, aged 91. Janet Josiah, aged 68. William Anthony Goss, Bill, aged 84. Michael Thomas Ellis, no age is given. Eileen Martin, no age is given. Leona Prowdoz, aged 81. Elspeth McKenzie, aged 96. And Ian Fulton, aged 84. May they rest in peace. And this is followed by the local Pancake Day races, a flipping good contest for annual Pancake Day races in aid of Home Starts Hearts. And there's lots of pictures of people running with pancakes and flipping pancakes and not eating pancakes, however. I don't think you'd want to eat them after you'd run with them. Pancake flippers took up their frying pans and raced to be crowned champion of an annual St Albans Shrove Tuesday event. Nearly 30 teams turned up to try their chances in the 9th annual St Albans Pancake Race, held outside St Albans Museum and Gallery on March the 5th. Competing in either the traditional running pancake race or the flipping walkers race, hopeful teams included Trestle Theatre Company, Debenhams Ottaway, Rumble Sedgwick, Flying Tiger Copenhagen, Dillon's, Lussman's, Private Fly and Radio Verulam. In the end, one of the understanding recruitment teams topped the running category, and digital marketing business Wagada won gold in the walking race. The winners in both categories received a trophy. A member of the Wagada team said they felt buzzing. St Albans and Hertfordshire has always had a strong community feel, and I think it's so important to see all these local businesses coming out, getting stuck in and having a lot of fun for a good cause. The event was in aid of Home Start Hearts, which supports local families dealing with the challenges they face. Home Start Hearts took over the event 3 years ago in conjunction with the Hearts Business Independent. It is sponsored by the local firm SA Law. Since 2017, the Shrove Tuesday contest has raised nearly £2,000. By the side of the track, fundraising support officer at Home Start Heart, Liz LeCose, said, "It's going really well. Everybody is getting really into it, and I think everybody is having fun, which is the most important thing, and the weather is on our side, which is fantastic. It's great to get the name of Home Start out there because we can support lots of families that are vulnerable or struggling, and it's really important to us to do something to pull the local community together as well. Shrove Tuesday is always 47 days before Easter Sunday, falling somewhere between February the 3rd and March the 9th each year. Traditionally, it was the last opportunity to use up eggs, fat and butter before Lent, the ingredients in pancakes."
Well, now here's a cautious budget set in a time of uncertainty, says the headline. The budget, known as the 2019-2020 and 2022-23 integrated plan, sets out the Conservative-controlled County Council's spending priorities for the next 3 years. In the face of increasing demand for services, reductions in funding from central government and inflationary pressures on suppliers. It includes investment in roads and schools, additional funding for those working in social care, and funding for a new team to tackle domestic abuse. But it also includes a series of measures designed to balance the books, with estimated savings of £19 million and council tax increases of 2.99%. Presenting the budget to the council, Councillor Ralph Zagster, the Executive Member for Resources and Performance, said that at this time of considerable uncertainty, there was a need to be cautious to ensure flexibility. Mr. Zagster said the decision to increase the council tax by 2.99%, the maximum allowed without a referendum, reflected the view that residents would rather pay more than have service reductions. While we'd not place that extra burden on council taxpayers, he says, we have a responsibility to provide timely frontline services to those who need them most. Like other local authorities, we're facing up to the challenges of reduced central government funding, a growing local population, and increasing demand for vital support services, in particular for the disabled, vulnerable children and adults and the elderly. He said that by the end of the year 2019-2020, the council would have made savings of almost £2 billion over the last decade, but acknowledged that it was getting harder every year to balance the books. At the meeting, opposition Liberal Democrat and Labour councillors put forward alternative budget proposals. The Lib Dems proposed additional funding was made available for highway locality budgets, where local councillors can fund highway projects. They also proposed spending £3.6 million on the wages of the county's lowest paid social care staff. They outlined a plan to spend £1 million to fund socially required bus routes and £380,000 to extend the current Saver Card scheme, which cuts the price of bus travel for young people, and to reverse the planned price increase. In addition, there were plans for a £200,000 scheme to subsidise the cost of school uniform for low-income parents. The Lib Dems proposed to fund the plans from reserves and invest to transform. That's a title, I presume. Invest to transform budgets. That was £2.92 million. And from business rates, £3.2 million, with additional funding from cuts to the council's publicity budget of £500,000. And a reduction in security for empty council-owned buildings, £150,000. Presenting these proposals, the Liberal Democrat councillor Paul Zukowski said the proposals were balanced, considered and thoughtful. Meanwhile, the Labour group also outlined alternative budget proposals that included the return of 7-day opening of household waste recycling centres at a cost of £1 million. Their proposals would reverse the proposed £829,000 cuts to youth services, reinstate supported housing budgets at a cost of £300,000, and increase highways locality budgets at a cost of £133,000. They would also introduce council tax discounts for care leavers at a cost of £55,000. And they would spend £100,000 to look at the feasibility of bringing adult care services in-house. The proposals also included £250,000 increase in the County Council's contribution to the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services to speed up treatment for the most urgent cases. The Labour group said this would all be paid for by taking £2.3 million from the Council's Invest to Transform budget and cutting the communications budget by £350,000. In future years, they say it could be funded by cutting 24 of the council's management posts, saving £1.726 million a year. Presenting the Labour proposals, Councillor Sharon Taylor said their alternative budget recognises fully the terrible impact of local government cuts, with only essential proposals or those which will save money in the longer term being put forward. She added, on the shortfall in our own children's and adult services this year, it's time we took a cross-party approach and wrote to the government together to tell them they have cut our services to the bone and we now need some holistic intensive therapy, which is shorthand for more money, and not just a tiny sticking plaster on a severed artery. Mr. Sangster said the opposition budget proposals had been some of the most reckless and financially damaging he had ever witnessed, demonstrating why they were not fit to manage the council's finances. Ultimately, these proposals were defeated and the Conservative budget plans went through unchanged.
There is a picture here of Mike Joyner, who is a disabled Harpenden man. And he has once again recorded evidence of a taxi driver telling him he is being charged extra for a wheelchair-compatible vehicle. The incident happened on February the 16th when Mike Joyner ordered an A1 taxi from his home for a 1.7-mile journey to Spar Harpenden Hospital. Mike has a rare condition called Addison's disease, which means his body does not produce enough cortisol, leaving him extremely fatigued, sometimes confused, and with such little muscle mass that he needs a wheelchair to get out of the house. When the vehicle arrived, the 53-year-old recorded his conversation with the driver. Mike said, "You don't charge excess, do you, for the chair?" The driver replied, "Yeah, we do." He then said, "The surcharge starts at £7 or something like that." Charging extra for wheelchair users became illegal in April 2017 under the Equality Act of 2010 for both private hire and taxis, with a penalty of a £1,000 fine and a licence review. This is not the first time Mike has been in this situation. In June 2017, the Hearts Advertiser published a recording of a different taxi firm doubling his fare because of the wheelchair. Mike said discrimination is all around us, from people walking down the street who think it is easier for me to go into the road around them. These people are just arrogant. When it comes to companies, there should be no excuses. He described it as degrading and has since complained to St Albans District Council. A spokesperson from the council said, "I can confirm we received a complaint that there's been a breach of the Equalities Act by a taxi firm, and we are now investigating this. We take such investigations very seriously." A1 taxis deny the accusations. The customer who made the booking was advised that to accommodate his requirements, there would be an element of an extra charge by reason of the fact a larger vehicle was required to accommodate the customer's requirements, and the fact that the only vehicle available was located in St Albans and would have to do the additional travelling time from St Albans to Harpenden. Had the customer not agreed, no vehicle would have been dispatched. At all times, A1 taxis strive to comply with licensing requirements. The spokesperson noted that Mike has not complained directly to A1 taxis, but if he did, it would be investigated accordingly.
Independent day school near town receives excellent rating. Staff and pupils at an independent school near Harpenden are celebrating after achieving an excellent inspection rating. Beechwood Park, a day and flexi boarding school in Markgate, received an excellent rating in all categories from the Independent Schools Inspectorate. The school caters for boys and girls aged 3 to 13, and inspectors reported that pupils demonstrate excellent knowledge in a wide variety of subject areas. The inspectors also said pupils show rapid development of skills and knowledge because of their excellent attitudes to learning and strong personal skills, which allow them to be engaged learners, and praise pupils for their extremely high levels of self-knowledge. Inspectors found that pupils consistently gained places at their first choice of selective secondary schools, and many achieved scholarships. pupils were particularly praised for their linguistic skills in both English and French. The report stated, even the youngest pupils use basic French words seamlessly in general conversation. Inspectors praise pupils' behaviour and personal development, saying pupils are respectful of each other and have a strong sense of right and wrong. According to the inspection report, older pupils said, teachers don't focus on mistakes. They help us answer questions so we get things right. And pupils are equipped to deal with situations where perseverance is required and do not give up. While the score was highly praised overall, inspectors said, in the context of the excellent outcomes, the school might wish to enhance pupils' achievement further by ensuring all teaching engages the pupils as creative and active learners. Headmaster Edward Balfour said, the excellence described in this report provides affirmation of the success of our unique and child-centred mission to nurture, engage and inspire all of our pupils. As the inspectors commented, there is no ceiling in what the children can achieve. I would like to thank the outstanding staff at Beechwood Park whose work and commitment have culminated in this immensely successful outcome.
And now to our weekly look at some of the radio programmes that you might enjoy listening to during the week ahead. Starting on Saturday, March the 9th, and a treat on Radio 4 Extra for fans of the music of Stephen Sondheim, the composer turns 89 later this month, and the Sondheim Archive is a three-hour special which was recorded at the BBC Radio Theatre in front of an audience and with long-time Sondheim performer Maria Friedman singing and presiding over a discussion about the man himself and his musical career. During the course of the three-hour epic, you can also hear an episode of Soul Music devoted to the famous song Send in the Clowns and an episode from Sondheim's Finishing the Hat, which was Book of the Week. There's plenty more to keep you entertained, and you can tune in to the Sondheim Archive on Radio 4 Extra from 9 a.m. or from 7 p.m. on Saturday. Also on Saturday evening, Archive on 4 turns the focus on the history of offensive comedy. With very little consensus on what humour is now acceptable and what is not, comedian Ed Bryan comes along to anchor this overview of a fraught landscape. You've only got to recall a few notorious cases of comedy deemed to be offensive, such as Monty Python's Life of Brian and the paedophile episode of Brass Eye, to realise there's plenty to discuss. Tiff Stevenson contributes, and I'm Only Joking with Ed Bryan starts on Radio 4 at 8 p.m. on Saturday.
Moving on to Sunday, March the 10th now, and Lauren Laverne's Castaway on Desert Island Discs is the broadcaster and campaigner, Dame Esther Ranson, who founded Childline. Esther will choose the 8 pieces of music that she would take away with her to her desert island at 11:15 a.m. on Radio 4. Meanwhile, over on Radio 3, Michael Barclay's guest on Private Passions from 12 noon is the actor Greta Scacchi. Her selection of music includes the theme from Heat and Dust, the film that made her famous, as well as Satie, Handel and Fats Waller. Private Passions, Radio 3 at 12 noon. There's nothing like a good classical drama that hooks you into a story so that you can't wait for the next episode. Currently, Chinatowns on Radio 4 on Saturday and Sunday afternoons does just that. Set in the Staffordshire Potteries during the Industrial Revolution, it's an adaptation based on the Five Towns novels of Arnold Bennett and is an unfolding tale of money, passion and daring to dream. Episode 8 of 11 of them will be broadcast on Sunday afternoon on Radio 4 starting at 3 p.m. But if you haven't started listening yet, then you can catch up with all the episodes on the BBC iPlayer or BBC Sounds app, or indeed on the BBC website. It is compelling listening, over on Classic FM at 7 p.m. on Sunday, the 10th of March, the former Tory MP turned radio presenter David Mellor will be celebrating his 70th birthday by playing a selection of music that has played a significant role in his life. It promises to be a varied mix, ranging from Rodgers and Hammerstein's Carousel to jazzed-up Bach with the Jacques Lussier Trio and on to Vaughan Williams and Tchaikovsky. And lastly, if you've never heard of somebody called Irving Lazar, then his intriguing story is the subject of Don't Call Me Swiftly on Radio 2 on Sunday evening at 9. Lazar was the most powerful talent agent and deal maker in Hollywood in the 1930s. His clients included Cary Grant, Cole Porter, Humphrey Bogart, Tennessee Williams, Walter Matthau, Cher, and Madonna, to name but a few. He negotiated the deal for David Frost to interview Richard Nixon, and allegedly Humphrey Bogart named him Swiftly after he got Bogart 3 jobs in one day. He hated the nickname, however, and you can find out why when Michael Grade presents Don't Call Me Swiftly on Radio 2 at 9 p.m. on Sunday evening.
So to other radio highlights during the week. And E.M. Foster's 1924 classic, A Passage to India, has been adapted for radio by Tanika Gupta and will be broadcast in the 15-minute drama slot at 10:45 each morning and repeated at 7:45 each evening on Radio 4, starting on Monday, March the 11th. Penelope Wilson narrates and takes the role of Mrs. Moore, who is excited to have the opportunity to see the real India on a visit to Chandrapur with Adela. Outside the mosque, they meet Dr. Aziz and the story unfolds. From 6:30 p.m. on Monday evening, Radio 2 presenter Sarah Cox will be dancing her socks off in the longest dance-a-thon. It will go on for more than 24 hours in aid of comic relief. Sarah will be joined by Claudia Winkleman and Tess Daly of Strictly Come Dancing fame, and hopefully the dancing will continue through to Tuesday evening. You can keep tuning in to Radio 2 to hear how they're getting on, and of course you can donate to spur them onwards through their tour de dance. Music of a classical nature is over on Radio 3 on Monday evening. Bernard Haitink, one of the world's most revered conductors, has just celebrated his 90th birthday and is marking the occasion with a concert which will be broadcast on Radio 3 on Monday evening at 7:30 p.m. The concert includes Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 22 and Bruckner's Symphony No. 4, both favourites of Bernard Haitink. Meanwhile, over on Radio 4 on Monday evening at 8, political commentator Steve Richards presents the first of a new series of programmes called The Brexit PM, in which he talks to insiders about Theresa May's leadership and diplomacy in the turbulent years since the EU referendum.
Something very much of the moment on Wednesday, March the 13th, as Stephen Fielding, a professor of political history, presents When to Break Up the Party. He was already working on the programme about political splits with his producer, Phil Tinline, when the independent group arrived on the scene last month. Now they take this timely opportunity to look back at similar seismic political shifts that took place from 1846 through to 1981 and put current events into context. When to Break Up the Party is on Radio 4 at 11 a.m. on Wednesday. Then on Thursday, March the 14th, you can join a gentle meander across Sussex with the Turtle Dove Pilgrimage. Folk singer Sam Lee, along with William Parsons of the British Pilgrimage Trust, lead 11 pilgrims on a journey across Sussex, tracing the origins of the iconic folk song, The Turtle Dove, which Vaughan Williams heard and captured on Edwardian recording equipment at the Plough Inn more than 100 years ago. The Turtle Dove Pilgrimage is on Radio 4 at 11 a.m. on Thursday. Lastly, on Friday, March the 15th, a look back to a man who was very much in the public eye in the 1980s. The Cambridge theologian, Don Cupid, became a hugely controversial figure among Christians when he made a TV series called Sea of Faith. His unorthodox thinking challenged the received theology of the time and made a deep impression on broadcaster Giles Fraser, who is now ordained in the Church of England. Giles Fraser asks why Sea of Faith mattered so much at the time, and he tracks down Don Cupid, who's now in his 80s and out of the media spotlight. Sea of Faith is at 11 a.m. on Friday, March the 15th, the Ides of March, no less. Good listening.
We've now come to the end of this recording. So from Michael, John, Angela and Mayo, and from Alex, who recorded and edited this edition, and Jill, who chose the radio selections, goodbye, and here's to the next time.